You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 67. Handholding is a euphemism. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. In this week's news, we'll be looking at the 25th anniversary of Star Trek: The Next Generation with a variety of stories. Then in the feature, we're joined by Charlene Schmidt and Laurie Sears as we shift gears to Voyager and discuss the Janeway Chakotay episode, Resolutions. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
I am fantastic, Chris. I really do hope that we are here to talk about Doctor Who, because I am ready. Allons-y!
I think you are. You know, I walked in the room and I didn't have my camera on yet, and I look over at the screen and you're reenacting your favorite moments from Doctor Who on camera all by yourself
in the Seattle studio. Allons-y, as they say. No, I did spend a good bit of time watching that, but I'm also watching a lot of DS9, so I've got that wrapped up. This show gets amazing near the end of the fifth season, which I'm sure I don't need to tell you.
No, it does. It really does. And, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about DS9 along the way here, although we're going to talk about TNG a lot today.
Oh,
yes. In the news, and then Voyager in the future.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
If we're lucky, the Bunky might even join us.
The Monkey might. How's your week going, Chris?
Oh, so things are going well here. I mean, we actually had two typhoons headed for us over the past couple of days, and one of them went directly over Honshu here. So it was quite stormy last night, and today it's all tropical. And
nice.
It's October 1st, and it's way too hot. So I'd be looking forward to some real autumn weather soon, I hope.
Yeah, me too. I love it when it gets chilly, and we had chilly weather for about 3 days, and now it's back to being warm. It just needs to make up its mind.
Oh, maybe one of these days. I don't know what the hell's going on with the weather these days, but anyway. Well, why don't we jump in? We have we have some housekeeping to do before we get into our TNG stuff here, and one thing we wanted to remind everyone of is that the Robbie Duncan McNeil interview on Trek News and Views is now out, came out this weekend. Of course, that's Colin's show, but Colin's not on this one. It's the Delta Angels, which is Char, Lori, Anna, Kate. And I have to say, with Char leading the pack, I'm not sure that angels is the right term to use here, but...
Yes.
It's a really good interview. You know, they talk about, of course, Star Trek a bit and Tom Paris and such, but they also talk about Chuck. They talk about 666 Park Avenue. They talk about theater as well, all sorts of things. So, you know, if you're interested in the creative side of acting and directing and you're interested in Robbie Duncan McNeil, definitely check it out. It's a very interesting interview, and it's not all Star Trek all the time. And that's at trek.fm/TNV47. And that will get you there. That's their 47th show, Greg.
Oh, that's great timing then.
It is perfect timing, isn't it? And Greg, another thing we've been failing to mention for weeks that I've been wanting to mention is how to listen to the Ready Room on your iOS device in a way that doesn't make you want to throw your phone against the wall.
Yeah, everybody downloading iOS 6 is like, oh my God, the YouTube app is gone. Oh my God, the Maps app changed. And the big one is, oh my God, music doesn't play podcasts anymore. So then people are downloading the new Apple Podcast app. I don't know about you, but I found it to be extremely lacking, especially on the iPad.
It is. When it first came out, of course, we were excited about it, and we downloaded it, and it kind of worked pretty well for the first couple of days I used it. But as I started to add more and more of my podcasts to the application, it just got to a point where you open it and it takes like 2 minutes before it responds to anything you do.
Yeah, I would turn it on when I left my house, and I would be to the bus and then waiting for the bus and then on the bus before I could actually tap a podcast to start listening to it.
Exactly. And the chapter support is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, they have markers where you can scrub, but they don't give you a list of chapters. They don't tell you the names of the chapters. It's ridiculous. So everyone, if you're listening on an iOS device, the way to go is an application called Downcast.
Yes, absolutely.
I think it's, is it $1.99 in the US store, Greg?
I'm actually not sure. I thought it was more expensive than that, but I know it's not terribly expensive. They actually did a sale recently where it was like 99 cents. It may have gone back up.
It's not expensive at all. It's a fantastic application. If you listen to a lot of podcasts, we really recommend that you grab Downcast for your iPhone or your iPad. Really great support. You know, we put a lot of effort into making our podcasts enhanced with chapters, with different artwork, with hyperlinks. And so you can take advantage of that, with Downcast. Just a recommendation from us. We're not advertising Downcast. It's just what Greg and I use to listen to all the many podcasts that we listen to, and it's a good experience.
Yeah, it's a question that keeps coming up on Twitter. People saying, this podcast app is really bad. What do you guys recommend? So yes, definitely recommend Downcast.
Another thing we're going to start doing, Greg, I just want to throw this stuff out at the beginning of the show here because, you know, when we do it at the end, I don't know how many people make it to the end of this show. It's kind of long. We've had some requests from a few people for this. We're going to start, and we did it with the last Ready Room, we're going to start putting in a regular MP3 version of the show on the show page that you can download if you want to. Now, it's not enhanced, it's just a straight audio file, but if you're using a BlackBerry, for example, and you have trouble listening to the show, you can go to the show page underneath the big image with the streaming player. We have a row of buttons. We're adding an MP3 button. Just click it and you can download a basic MP3 file of the show.
And if you look really carefully and really closely, you can find the hidden icon where you can download the special video version of our show that Chris has actually been doing ever since episode one.
Yeah. I love putting all that effort into it and then hiding it from everyone. Yeah,
it's a little embarrassing at times, especially when I've got the robe on and all my chest hair is showing.
Oh man, that was a sight.
Sorry, guys.
I've had a lot of requests for video of that show, but
more sure next time Tristan's on and he's wearing his robe.
Oh yes, but we have to remind Ben to put pants on next time.
Every time we have to remind him to put pants on. It's getting to be a problem.
Okay, so the other two quick things. Where to find us on Twitter, because this always comes at the end of the show. Of course, you can find Trek FM on Twitter. Trek FM, it's really easy. You can find me on Twitter, C. Brian Jones, Brian with a Y. And Greg, what's your Twitter handle?
Yep, I'm there at Greg Harbin, GREGHARB as in boy, IN.
Excellent. All right, good. And the last thing, when you go to iTunes, if you enjoy the show, if you want to help other people find the show, you can leave us a review there. Just hop on the page and let us know what you think, because we like to hear from you. And we haven't heard from anyone in quite a while, even though we hear from people on Twitter pretty much constantly. So let us know that. Okay, Greg, what's up first in our big TNG extravaganza right now?
Yes. Well, of course, I hope everyone listening to our show knows that this week was the 25th anniversary of the premiere of Next Generation. Of course, it premiered at different times and on different days, depending on exactly where you were, because it was a syndicated show. So it wasn't like nowadays when you can say, tune in Thursday, 8, 7 Central to NBC. You kind of had to chase it around. There's one story. Friend of the show, Larry Nemechek, actually had to tune in, I think it was Monday night at 10:30 p.m. to watch Next Generation premiere. And somehow he got friends together to come over to his house for a big cookout, and then they watched it. But imagine, I mean, and that was a two-hour pilot, so these people were up past midnight to watch Star Trek. That's some dedication. What about you, Chris? When did it air? Did it air at some reasonable hour for you?
You know, I don't remember exactly. I mean, I remember it starting. I was in high school. I don't remember exactly what, you know, day or time it came on, though. That's a little bit of information that has slipped my mind at this point.
It slipped it. You don't have... Larry showed... Did you see this? Larry showed the flyer he handed out to people to invite people over Apparently, he still has copies of the flyer after 25 years.
Oh,
we
wow.
should have a link to this article in the show page.
Me. Yeah, yeah, we should pull that out.
Obviously,
yeah.
I don't remember. I know we watched the pilot when it premiered. I just, yeah, that I was quite young at the time. But it's really good to see that finally, after the whole year has gone by, people are really saying, yes, this is the 25th anniversary of TNG. Let's go ahead and talk about it. I'm seeing a bunch of articles everywhere about it. We picked one in particular from Time Magazine that was talking less about the technology of Star Trek, you know, like the iPad being invented on Star Trek, and more about how the show itself changed pop culture and changed television.
Right, yeah, and this is an interesting piece because you see a lot of these infographics where people talk about how Star Trek influenced technology, and of course they bring up the iPad, they bring up, you know, many other aspects of science and technology. But this one's talking about how we tell stories on television, largely, and they talk about the concept of rebooting a series, which, you know, these days they reboot everything. I mean, I don't know if you've heard, but I think the ALF reboot is coming up soon.
I believe it actually is, yes.
It probably is.
I'm pretty
Who
sure
knows?
There is an ALF pilot script floating around. I don't know if it's been greenlit yet, but that's actually a thing.
Speaking of which, do we really need another Sherlock Holmes show? What is CBS doing with
Elementary
this Lucy Liu as
good...
Watson?
It pulled some good numbers. I was really impressed, but it's horrible. And they didn't even, you know, NBC approached, I believe it's Moffat over at the BBC, to say, can we just do an American version? And they basically said, no, we're not interested whatsoever. So they just made their own. But it's ridiculous because it's not London. It's not the typical Sherlock. It's not, you know, it's modern day. Like, why are we even bothering with it if it's so far removed? Hey, that's a whole tangent. But yes, reboots are all the rage these days. And I guess, yeah, you can track it back to this. Although, I mean, reboots were being done here and there. But I guess Star
sure.
Trek was one of the highest profile ones.
Right, right. And I think it's a bit of hindsight, of course. I mean, mm-hmm. if we traveled back to 1987 and we saw this Star Trek The Next Generation coming on television, we might not think, wow, you know, this is going to revolutionize storytelling
right.
on television. You know, this is a great reboot. But in hindsight, you know, it definitely did. And
well, I doubt we would have seen stuff like Battlestar Galactica or Doctor Who being rebooted without the success of Star Trek.
So say we all. Allons-y!
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. So that's what they talk about here, and it's, you know, and they cite the numbers. I mean, it's really amazing that The Next Generation as a syndicated show is pulling in 15 to 20 million viewers a week.
Oh, I mean, that's impressive for any show.
Well, for these days, for absolutely any show, of course.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, actually, 1994, when the Emmy nominations were coming out, and The Next Generation was nominated for Best Drama Series. And I thought, like, this is the great achievement for this franchise that, and this cast, that they actually have garnered a nomination for Best Drama. Because, you know, the Emmys basically turn their nose up at science fiction.
Yeah.
I think even today, and especially back then, it was completely unheard of. And I should point out that the same year The X-Files were also nominated for Best Drama. So it was a great year, but
yeah, I mean, we that really was a golden age of TV, especially network TV. I feel like now all the best TV has been moved to cable. People keep trying on networks, which is fantastic. But really, if you wanted to tune in and see some great stuff, X-Files and Star Trek were some of the best shows on the air, and that was really cool. And I think it really did help promote the idea that people are tuning in to watch sci-fi. It's not just kids. It's not just low budget, you know, let's just throw some goofy stuff at the screen. But people are tuning in for really interesting storylines. And that's what led to, yeah, these darker reboots of sci-fi shows, and really led to what we're looking at today, where sci-fi, where genre is especially on film, it's the number one thing. It's the biggest thing people go to see. And it's a very big part of television as well.
Yeah, definitely it is. And someone on Twitter yesterday was tweeting, I have a column for hashtag Star Trek. And I saw someone tweet that watching Star Trek The Next Generation really highlights what science fiction on television has lost in a way, they said. And what they were talking about were more of the character interactions. And I almost replied to them. And I was going to say, I think you may be referring more to Deep Space Nine, but
right.
I didn't want to get into a big discussion about it at the time because it was like one in the morning. But
right. I've seen some weird stuff on Twitter about Star Trek. Someone was telling me that they can't get into DS9 because the lighting is weird and there's always Vaseline on the lens.
What?
I'm not sure what show you're talking about.
Wait. They're talking about the lens that was used to shoot the show or the lens that they have in their hand right now as they're in there with their Netflix on. I don't know.
I'm not entirely sure, really. I look at DS9 and it's very nicely shot. I mean, it's way better than TNG. I guess you're not always gonna like the dark look, and they are always lighting it like with a grate over the light. If you look at it, there's always texture going on.
Right.
But I love that. I think it's really cool and it gives it a distinctive look. And it's something you look at most TV and it's very flatly lit. Star Trek was always trying new things, always pushing the boundaries.
Yeah. Well, without a doubt, Next Generation has greatly influenced, I think, how stories are told in television, how TV series have been put together since that time, both in terms of distribution. I mean, yeah, maybe they're not all syndication, but like you said, the shift towards sci-fi, you know, other cable networks, definitely has been influenced by that as well. So we'll put a link to this article in the show notes. Yeah. We really just kind of touched on the general gist of the article here over on Time.
But yeah, it's a really interesting article and definitely worth the read, and good to see Time and the other stuff like Wired. We're not getting a chance to talk about this massive interview with Ronald D. Moore that Wired did. So hopefully we'll touch on that next week after we've had a chance to read it and delve into it and find out if they asked him about the ending of Generations.
They need to hire you to write. So every interview with him will
yes.
end with that question, right? No matter what it's about.
Always turn the conversation. Yes, Ron, that's very interesting about that new show that you're pitching that's not going to even make it to pilot. Now, let's go ahead and talk about Generations, because that's what's really on all of our viewers' minds.
Oh, well, Greg, talking about TNG a bit more here, StarTrek.com has been running a series of articles with various members of the TNG cast, and they've been asking them to reflect on their memories both of the TV show and of the movies and talk about their favorite movies, their favorite episodes, and their favorite guest stars. So I thought we would just go through some of their answers here and just see what we think about these. See if you agree, disagree.
Okay.
So
absolutely.
The movies are quite easy. Everyone, except for Marina Sirtis, said First Contact was their favorite project of the films.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty easy, right? It was the best film of the next gen ones, possibly the best film of all of them. Jonathan Frakes directed it. They gave Patrick Stewart a ton of stuff to do. They gave Data a bunch of stuff to do. Maybe Beverly really didn't have that much to do, and I should say Gates McFadden. They didn't give her that much to do in the film, but still, how can you go see in the movie theater and not say, wow, this is an impressive spectacle? Now, which one did Marina say she likes the best?
She said her favorite is Generations.
Because she got to crash the ship, I suppose.
I knew you were going to say that.
Oh, man.
I guess so, though. I mean, you talk about, you know, Troy doesn't get a lot to do in a lot of episodes. And of course, in First Contact, I mean, well, she got to do the countdown, which, you know,
that's true.
Really critical to the plot of the movie.
And she got drunk with Zefram Cochrane.
She did. Which is actually one of the best scenes in Star
really
Trek.
Really is. Although, to be fair, it's one of the best scenes because of what Frakes does. He's phenomenal, and James Cromwell as well. Although, yeah, she was an essential part of that scene, definitely.
She was. She's really good in that scene.
And it's that line that I quote all the time. It's, timeline? We don't have time to argue about the timeline.
We don't have the time.
Yes.
Exactly. Oh, but yeah, I mean, you know, she doesn't get a lot to do usually, but yeah. She did get to crash the ship in Generations, and mm-hmm. that's definitely something.
She also, to be fair, she had that really good scene with Captain Picard near the beginning where she's asking him, you know, why he's so sad, and he explains to her about what's happened with his family. And it's one of those times when she's actually getting to be a counselor on the ship.
That's true. That's very true. So I think I can see for her why Generations was her favorite movie, because it was the film in which Troy had the most Troy moments, I think.
Right.
You know, to be Troy. So that sums up the films. I mean, I have to agree with everyone in the film, like you said. First Contact landed right in the middle of the golden age of Star Trek.
Yeah.
I think that it was the pinnacle of what the franchise was doing overall. You know, it landed there in... Where were we on DS9 at that point? Fifth season range?
Well, third or fourth, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, things were really firing on all cylinders at that point.
Oh, yeah, and, absolutely. Yeah, that's... And, yeah, Voyager just premiered. All of that was going on. Really, yeah, really fantastic. I remember that as being, wow, I'm so excited to be a Star Trek fan right now. And I was only, what, 10 years old?
Yeah, but no, that's how I felt too. I think everyone yeah. felt that way back then. Okay, so favorite episodes. Will Wheaton's favorite episodes mm-hmm. are Final Mission,
right?
First Duty, mm-hmm. and The Best of Both Worlds.
Yeah, I mean, that's a solid list. You got to put Best of Both Worlds on there. And Final Mission was his last as a regular recurring actor on the show.
Right.
Yeah. First Duty is probably the best Wesley episode. Tell me if you can think of a better one. First Duty is a really, really good episode and features not only him, but also I believe that's the one that had good old Robbie Duncan McNeil as a proto Tom Paris.
It was. Yep, that is correct. And yeah, I'd agree. That's probably, yeah, from a character standpoint, the best Wesley episode. You know, he's not annoying in that episode. He's
exactly,
like an actual he's like actual 20-something year old
yeah.
cadet at the academy,
right.
You know, going through things. So yeah, that worked pretty well for me.
So this is a pretty solid list. It's similar to a list I would make, although obviously weighted a little bit towards the Wesley episodes. Whereas I might say something like The Inner Light, might throw that on there just to make sure.
Right, right. Now, not surprisingly, Denise Crosby said that her favorite episode is Yesterday's Enterprise.
Of course. I am really glad she didn't say, what was it, Unification Part 2?
Oh, gosh.
Which is just, it's the Mary Sue syndrome gone wild. Oh, Denise wants to be back. Let's do whatever she wants. And it's, not good at all. Yesterday's Enterprise worked out pretty well for bringing Yar back. I don't really have a problem with the episode. I mean, it's a really solid episode, and I don't have a problem with Yar being in it at all.
Oh, no. I think Yar was very important in that episode. It was very smart of them to bring her back in that episode because she provided them the element that they needed to show that the timeline had split at some point in the past.
Right.
And in a way that made complete sense to the fans. So... it was great. It's amazing. I think it's on the... Which movie is it? It's on the Blu-ray commentary for... I think it's The Undiscovered Country with Larry and Ira. I think Larry and Ira are doing the commentary on there. And they get off into talking about Yesterday's Enterprise and how everyone thought that the episode was going to be a complete disaster.
Right. Yes. I remember hearing about that.
And it shows sometimes how... when you think something is going to be your worst work and you feel frazzled and like everything's falling apart around you, that sometimes that's when you produce your best work.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think it's showing that she didn't mention the episode where she dies as being one of her favorite ones, because as much as they put effort into making it good and they gave her the whole holographic speech at the end, it just kind of falls flat.
Well, yeah, they didn't make it good. I mean, what, you know, the way Jadzia Dax dies in DS9, right, I thought was quite lame, but at least it had some kind of meaning to it.
Right.
The whole Yar thing was just like, well, she doesn't be on the show anymore. Why don't we cover her up with a hefty bag? And it's, you see someone pointed out on Twitter this week that we've never really noticed this. Maybe it's a little known fact about that episode of The Next Generation that Tasha records her farewell message using Windows XP.
That was one of the thoughts I had when watching Skin of Evil pretty recently. I don't think I've watched the HD version of it yet.
That's where you really notice it.
Definitely. It's really bright and really, yeah, that
you got the blue sky, you got the
sky clouds,
and
the
green
grass.
Yeah. Yeah. And the start button, I mean, that's a real giveaway.
Yes, Clippy shows up. Looks like you're trying to record a farewell message to your friends and family. Would you like some help?
That's right. All right. But yeah, you are coming back. I mean, it worked pretty well for me. So, Greg, tell us, what did Jonathan Frakes have to say about TNG?
Right. So Frakes says best of both worlds, again, obviously, and then The Offspring, which I probably wouldn't say that's one of my favorite Frakes directed episodes. That was the first one he directed, so obviously it was a really good experience for him. I would say most people would say the favorite of their episodes that he did was The Drumhead. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head what my favorite was. He obviously became a really good director later on, making a couple films, including First Contact, and then some non-Star Trek films, and now he's back being a TV director. So it makes absolute sense that he would say his first directing experience was one of his favorites.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely.
Because there's nothing wrong with Offspring. It was right. One of those, you know, yeah, Data's Got a Child, one of those episodes. Nothing wrong with it, but it's just, it never doesn't jump out at me.
Now, are you sure that he chose it because it was his first episode as a director, or because he got to hit on an android in that episode?
That's possible. You always got to love it when you can hit on an android.
All right. So who else do we have on the list? Yeah. They didn't get every single person, but they got a few more people.
Yeah. Yeah. So Gates McFadden does mention her directing debut, which was Genesis. And she also mentions the Big Goodbye, Data's Day, and Attached. And out of those, yes, the Big Goodbye is just wonderful. That's got to be on one of my, it's at least on my top 10 list. And she got to, you know, dress in the period clothes and have a big role in it. That was first season, though, right? It's one of the better first season episodes they managed to do.
It is, actually. And it is a good episode. Yeah. And I love the fact that in First Contact, they reference that episode when they go into the holodeck and he pulls up the Big Goodbye holodeck program.
What's shaking, Dix? The usual. Martinis and skirts.
Just on the screen, though, I remember when I watched that movie in the theater, and just when he punches it up, and on the screen outside the holodeck, it says "The Big Goodbye," and I thought, "See, now this is good. This is where the writers know their material, and they know their fans, and they don't even speak the words, but it's on the screen, and all the fans are having their little geekgasm in the theater."
Well, and that's the sort of moment that would have been in Nemesis. Because they got Logan to write it, and he's such a huge Star Trek fan, but Baird went through and systematically removed every one of those moments from the actual film.
Yeah, that's too bad. I think Gates's list here makes a lot of sense. Now Genesis, I think, is very appropriately named, because you know the old song by Genesis called "Land of Confusion." Clearly, there was a this was filmed in a land of scientific confusion.
Yeah.
Here, as Barkley devolves into a spider and...
Well, you've read the non-canon novel, right? About the Barkley ancestors who mated with spiders on the planet Arachna. So it makes perfect sense after you've read the novel.
Right, after the novel... I do love how you can fill in the blanks that way, because of course the writers, you know, they had advanced copies of that novel. So.
That's great. Genesis is such a mess. We probably should do Genesis one of these days.
We should.
But it's at least competently directed. We can't really complain about that. It's kind of scary even in moments. It's just the script was a complete mess from concept.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the script and the concept. The Big Goodbye, yeah, I totally get. It was a great episode for Beverly. Data's Day, I mean, she gets to dance in the episode.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Gates dances. And so that's, obviously, I can understand why that was a very meaningful episode for her. Great opportunity. And then Attached, you know, one of the few opportunities where we actually got to explore the Picard-Beverly dynamic a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean... For a character that didn't have much to do, when they did, it was some pretty good moments. I mean, as long as she's not falling in love with her grandmother's alien boyfriend, she's had a lot of really good, solid Beverly episodes. I'm surprised she doesn't have your favorite episode on here.
My favorite Beverly episode?
Yeah, well, Remember Me, yes?
I love Remember
really,
Me.
Really good.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised she didn't have that on the list.
Yeah, I am, actually, because that's the episode where Beverly has the most to do.
Yeah.
I mean, she's the complete focus of the episode, and that's a very good episode, I think, and one that I feel is often overlooked, because I never hear anyone talk about that episode. It's kind of like lost in the middle of the series, but...
Maybe she's forgotten it herself.
Maybe so. Maybe it got swept away in a static warp bubble.
Yes. So also we have on the list Michael Dorn. Michael Dorn likes... We mentioned the drumhead, which was that, you know, have we gone too far? Sort of courtroom drama that I hate and everyone else loves. And also The Offspring, which I'm not sure why Dorn's picking The Offspring. Did Worf have much to do in that one?
I don't know. You know, I think maybe Worf and Law, you know, they slipped out of 10 forward when we weren't looking. Had a little...
That could be.
They, you know, spiked the prune juice and...
Well, there's a non-canon novel right there that I don't think is going to get written.
I thought you and Char were working on that one also.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah, Data would have had a field day with that. But, yeah, I mean, The Offspring's a great episode. So, I guess he's just talking about it as a fan to say... I mean, people consider it a great episode. Like I said, a little bit, you know, whatever, on it. But, yeah, as a fan, I guess it's worthy of being on the list.
Well, then we finally have Marina, who picked Face of the Enemy and Violations.
Hmm. I'm not sure what I would pick if I were her. So it's hard to even say, oh, those are awful episodes. Because if you have to pick, and I would assume most of the people would pick a... Troy-centric episode, pick a, you know, an episode of their character, what are you really going to go with?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can understand that she picks Face of the Enemy because, again, that's where she really had something to do for the whole episode, even though she did it as a Romulan, which should be a slogan. Now, we need the slogan, do it as a Romulan.
Do it as a Romulan. Interesting. Okay, all right.
Do you think that Troy wanted to be the Praetor?
I wouldn't surprise me. That's the episode where she's sort of like kidnapped and forced to help out in the sort of Romulan plan, and she's really not in control whatsoever throughout the whole thing. She's got some Romulan guy telling her what to do, and she sort of just follows along.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really like that one. But at least she does get to dress up as a Romulan, and that's always a plus.
Right. Which, by the way, do we have Romulan cosplay on our list yet?
I've been talking about doing Romulan cosplay, yes. So if we don't have it on the list, we need to make sure it is.
Okay, because now we are talking Romulan Commander from the Enterprise incident, right?
Yes, definitely. I definitely know. I would want to be a TOS Romulan, I think, rather than a TNG. I love those Roman uniforms that they get to wear.
Like they did in the comics, too, when they read it.
Oh,
they really captured the TOS feel very well.
Oh,
you know, people on Twitter, they're getting really concerned about our costume changes. but I did find one yesterday, going off topic here just a little bit, that no one else is going to do, I know. The monkey from Resolutions. No one ever comes to the con as the monkey from Resolutions.
That's really surprising. People do some pretty esoteric cosplays. I don't know why it's not in there.
But I think I'm going to do it, and I'm just going to pop up here and there all over the convention, all over the hotel, all over the convention center. I'm just going to be, like, people are going to be watching a panel. I'm just going to pop up right off stage for a moment and then run away. And then I'm going to pop up at the coffee stand and I'm going to run away.
And everyone's going to be like, why was the monkey here? And who knows?
Who knows? All right. So back to Marina here. Violations, yes. Which is the rape episode.
One of the rape episodes.
Yeah, one of.
Yeah.
I don't know. Why don't we move into guest stars? And when we get to Marina's answers about guest stars, I think that we will find out a little bit more why she has trouble picking an episode here.
There you go.
So,
okay. So first off, we have Will Wheaton, who said that working with Mick Fleetwood was one of the greatest moments of his life, which, okay, sure, Will, whatever you say, Mick Fleetwood.
Well, I have to say that I agree with Will that it would be pretty cool if I run the set and Mick Fleetwood came on. I mean, granted, he looked like a giant fish the whole time he was on the set.
Yes.
But it's still Mick Fleetwood, and, you know, that's pretty cool. So
I can
go with that.
I don't know. I would have picked someone who had a little bit more guest role-y come on rather than somebody who was just pretty much doing a cameo, but...
Well, I think that Will's talking about getting to talk to Mick off camera the whole time on the set, so...
And then we have Brent Spiner, who has three answers. We have Whoopi Goldberg, Saul Rubinek, and Gene Simmons, which I definitely have to say, yes, Saul Rubinek. I forget what the episode was called where Data gets kidnapped. It's
the most
really
toys.
Good. Yes, the most toys. Really fantastic. I'm actually looking forward to seeing Warehouse 13 this season, which is Saul's show right now on Sci-Fi, because Brent Spiner's doing an arc. So to see them back together again is going to be really fun. And I'm sure that's part of why Spiner picked him on the list. He is really good. And he's one of those times when, you know, an episode kind of hinges on whether the guest star is good or not. I think the most famous bad example of that is Too Short a Season, where, wow, that just did not work. Whereas this is the complete opposite. Saul Rubinek elevated that character way over what the page had. And I love going back and watching The Most Toys.
Yeah, it is a great episode. And I can see that, yeah, for sure. Now, Whoopi Goldberg here, I don't know. There was an interesting answer because I know she's kind of a guest, I suppose. But to me, Whoopi is part of the TNG cast. I can't imagine TNG without Whoopi.
Right. Yeah. No, she's more of a Garrick of TNG, where she's a recurring role rather than just a guest star. But still, I mean, if you're going to mention guest stars you liked working with, absolutely mention her. I'm not going to say she shouldn't be on the list whatsoever. But no, when I think of her, I don't think of her as being a guest star at all.
No, I don't either. And Brent also had on here Gene Simmons, who played Rear Admiral Nora Sati in the episode we've been talking about over and over here, the Drumhead.
Right. Which, we really should do a Drumhead episode so we can just hash out all the issues I have with the episode and we can just get it all out there. But she did a good job in that role, so.
She did, yeah. We'll do it after the TNG Season 2 Blu-rays come out and we can afford to buy them. And so we can see the extra footage because I would really like to talk about that.
Yeah, that'd be very cool. So we also have Denise Crosby, who mentions working with Christopher McDonald, who I don't... Okay, I mean, she was only on, what, 10 episodes, so what's she really going to pick?
Right, right. And of course, this is from yesterday's Enterprise, so...
Right. I mean...
She had the most interaction there, I feel, of the episodes that she was in, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, I get that.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday's Enterprise. We just can't say enough. That could have been a TNG movie, and I'd be really happy.
It would have been great. Excellent, yeah. Jonathan Frakes, he picked Gene Simmons, Michelle Forbes, and Carolyn McCormick, who played Minuet. So,
right.
Wink, wink, now, nudge, I think I understand that one.
I'm definitely seeing a pattern here. He slept with Ensign Rowe. He slept with, or at least wanted to sleep with Minuet. Gene Simmons, definitely seeing a pattern here.
So, so you're saying that he slept with the Rear Admiral.
I'm just going by what Frakes was going on, you know.
Yeah, all right.
Two out of three makes for a pattern.
And what do you mean he wanted to sleep with Minuet? You don't think he actually slept with Minuet?
Yes, I'm well aware of how much time Riker spends in the holodeck, and it can't all be playing around in the Enterprise holonovels.
He can't, yeah. You know, and as I discovered yesterday, you know, William T. Riker, he is the Samantha Jones of the 24th century.
Yes, this is very true.
All right, so Gates McFadden picked Malcolm McDowell and Tom Morello.
Right, and okay, so Malcolm McDowell obviously was the guest star in Generations. I don't think Gates had much to do with him. He was in sick bay for a couple minutes, but I'm sure it's one of those cases of he was on set. She was able to talk to him. He's a fascinating guy. We've talked about him, I know, on the show before. So it's good to bring him up. And, you know, kind of looking at this list, it's kind of impressive how many really big, really interesting names they got to be on TNG. And Malcolm's one of them, for sure.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure, again, here she's talking about his performance in the movie and, you know, interacting with him on the set, even though, you know, I mean, Gates didn't have that many scenes with the various actors just because of her position on the ship. So,
right. And what did Tom Morello get to do on Next Gen? Remind me.
Well, see, this is interesting that she chose this because it has to just be off camera stuff here, and maybe because he is a musician and she likes him for that. He was one of the Sona officers in Insurrection, but he was uncredited.
Right. So, he was just sort of a guy off in the corner there.
Right.
And it's not like Crusher had any scenes with the Sona. So yeah, it must have just been they were at a sushi restaurant or something and got to have a chat, and maybe she's a big Rage fan.
I guess, you know, it must be. So it was an interesting
Gates McFadden
answer.
And Paul Ryan.
Yeah, right. Oh, great. Let's not go there. So, all right. So that's that one. Who else do we have that we didn't cover yet? Michael Dorn, Gene Simmons, John Anderson, John Colicos.
Yep.
And Marina Sirtis. This is what I was saying earlier.
Right.
She chose Jimmy Doohan.
Right.
Which... I definitely can understand. That would be great.
Well, you might think she didn't even have that much to do with him, but she actually had a long scene with him that got cut out of the final episode. But she actually did have, what I understand, was a really powerful scene with him that just had to get cut for time.
Yeah. And the thing that she said in the article, which kind of highlights the role of Troy on The Next Generation, I think, is that she started naming off lots of different people, and she said, I didn't get to work with so-and-so.
Right.
I didn't get to work with so-and-so. I didn't get to work with so-and-so. Patrick and Brent got to work with everybody.
Right.
I didn't get to work with anybody. Poor Marina. I feel like she just, I don't know if I said this on the show or I said it on Twitter or where I said it recently, but I just have a feeling that if The Next Generation had been written in the 90s, the 2000s, that Troy may have actually been a very interesting character. But
yeah, I think so.
The role she was fulfilling on the show in the 80s was just such that she got to run around and kind of sense that someone needed some emotional support, and then she wasn't quite sure how to give it. But hell, we're going to talk about it because it's the feel good 80s. So, right. And I know Larry doesn't totally agree with this premise that we have, but I just, when I watch it, I just do feel like that's kind of how it came across on camera anyway, regardless of whether that was the intention when the character was created.
Yeah, I mean, the show sort of started as a D&D game on the bridge. And as they sort of started fleshing out the characters, they fleshed out Picard a lot. They fleshed out Riker somewhat and Data a whole bunch. And even Geordi. They never really got around to fleshing out Troy, which is really unfortunate. Because I think they really could have if they'd put the effort into it.
Yeah, they could have. But anyway, that's not going to happen anytime soon. So
right.
But speaking of that, let's move on to our next item here. And we'll have links in the show notes to three different articles on StarTrek.com if you want to go and watch that. And actually, the one about the episodes, I believe they have video talking to the actors. So
very
that
cool.
will be there. But another thing, this was on TrekNews.net, which comes from New Media Rock. This is LeVar Burton talking about the possibility of an on-screen reunion. So, like, do we think, like, is there still in the future any chance that we might be able to revisit these characters on screen?
Yeah, and that's a really, really interesting thing. And, of course, it's what they always ask when they get one of these people together. And, you know, they're talking about how they're getting them everybody together for conventions, like the one in Calgary. I think there's one in Austin coming up. So they're getting the cast together. But the idea of doing an actual, what would it be? A TNG TV movie, like a special. I'm actually kind of surprised that there's not sort of something running on CBS. Like a 25th anniversary special, like let's show some of the best episodes and show the cast all together. It's really surprising not doing something like that at the very least. So trying to think of, would they also put the money into doing an actual next gen? Man, I really cannot see that happening.
No, I don't see it happening either. And that's what LeVar says here, that he says, I doubt it. You know, that's what's weird is that I don't know how long it's been since we've actually been in active production on anything like a movie as a cast, over 10 years. And I think the love that people give us, the next gen cast, is just phenomenal. But people ask, is there any chance? And he says, I don't think so. It's not up to me. They certainly don't consult me. he said that he'd certainly be open to it. It would depend on the story. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, I don't know. I don't see it happening. But let me ask you, Greg. I mean, would you, at this point, as we know what all the different actors are doing in their lives right now, we know how they have aged. You know, we saw the original series cast get much, much older, come back, reprise their roles, which I thought they did really well. And in some ways, for me, TOS, again, even though I grew up watching the series on television, TOS characters for me are their movie counterparts, I think. They are their movie versions of themselves, for the most part.
I think it's a real missed opportunity that we've not been making next-gen movies for the past 10 years. I mean, we had a huge gap between Insurrection and Nemesis, and then Nemesis was the last one. We could have seen Riker go on and Captain the Titan, could have even had stories where the Enterprise and the Titan are going on a joint mission. Like, we don't have to throw it all together so that Riker's back in first officer. Like, they could have continued the storyline, really show what Worf ran off and did and do all of that. And I think we could have seen 10 years, 15 years of that, and I'd be really happy. I think that's a real missed opportunity. I just don't think they can jump back in at this point. I think...
Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah, I agree. We missed a lot. I think that stories that could have been told and the expansion of the universe over the past 10, 15 years. But yeah, at this point, I can't see, and I don't even know as a fan that I want to see the cast come back together now.
Yeah, I'm kind of reading, we're not going to talk about it on this show, but reading Hive, the comic from Brandon Braga, and it is kind of that. It's, where are these characters now? And it's, old Picard and old Riker and old Troy. And yeah, I don't know. It would feel really, really strange. What I would have liked to see is a movie in 2000, 2002, 4, 6, and 8. And then let's let JJ take over the franchise with a reboot after having a really big, you know, blowout extravaganza. I don't think we need to transition into DS9 or Voyager movies or Enterprise movies, but let's have a solid series of TNG movies before passing it over. But at this point, I do believe that that ship has sailed.
I think it is. Yes, we cannot turn back time and do that. Right. So,
time is the fire in which we burn, as they say.
Which is one of my favorite quotes from
it is
Generations.
I say that and people take it the wrong way. It's like, no, I understand that it's a bad guy saying it, but it's still an interesting thing to think about.
That's pretty true, I would say. All right. Well, this was interesting. We'll put a link to this in the show notes as well. You can go to New Media Rockstars and read the full interview. You can go over to TrekNews.net where Brian has excerpted some of the key points for you as well. It's interesting. And he also mentions how much he loves Twitter. And actually, let me read this quote, because this is what I love about Twitter and the Star Trek cast and the way they interact with the fans these days. LeVar says, "I love Twitter. Here is what I love about Twitter is that it is a conversation that I get to have with my fans, and there is no publicist in the middle. There's no studio. There is no network. It's just me. It's what I want to say, how I want to say it in 140 characters or less." And I just really appreciate that people like LeVar Burton care enough about the fans to actually talk to us ordinary people on Twitter like that.
Did you see the classic reuniting of Captain Picard and Captain Kirk to fight the evil nemesis Time Warner Cable?
Yes,
on Twitter
I did
this week. That was one of the greatest moments in Twitter history, especially Star Trek Twitter. You just want to see them get on a bridge with Time Warner Cable and just duke it out in fisticuffs.
It was awesome. So someone actually took a screen capture of back-to-back of the conversation between Shatner and Stewart and tweeted that out as an image, and it was awesome.
Really great. Yeah.
All right. Let's see. As we kind of conclude news here, we're just doing all TNG stuff in news today. So, just because it's a big moment. It's the 25th anniversary of the turning point of the franchise. And Greg, you actually sent me an iMessage about this. Yeah. And I think you said, "Amazon wants to sell me the Next Generation Season 2 Blu-ray for $114.99.
It's
and
crazy.
I mean, my response to you was WTF ? Right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. No, that's about right. I mean, we've got the, suggested retail price of $129.99. And then even with the discount, they're still saying $114.99. Now, this is kind of what happened last time around. And then the price came down. But why did they come out of the gate pretending are they really going to try to sell it for this? Maybe they sold too many copies of season one and they think they can eke out a little bit more money.
I don't know. I went to check. Okay, so the release date is December 4th. So we are still 2 months out. Like you said, what happened last time is as we got closer to the release date, the price started coming down. So I went to check. The Amazon price is $114.99. The Best Buy price is currently $114.99. Walmart does not yet list this product on their website. What happened last time was Best Buy, Walmart, and Amazon got into a big pricing war, and that drove the price down to $59.99, I believe. So we will see if it happens this time. I certainly hope it does. I really want to get the set. I can't pay $115 plus international shipping for the set
at this point in time.
So
yeah, I wish they would standardize the pricing. I mean, there were places where you could find it for like $59.99, but I went into Target and ended up spending $79.99. Like, why can't there be one price? I mean, you can pretty much buy the Avengers Blu-ray this weekend for $24. It's just, there's the price, buy it on Amazon, buy it at Target, buy it at Walmart. Why is it so weird? Like, I don't understand why I really have to do all of this price shopping and order it online, then I have to worry about it getting shipped. No, just have suggested retail price, $59.99, then everyone sells it for that much and everybody's happy.
It would work for me. And I think that's a good price point. I mean, $59.99 for these sets, I'm absolutely fine with. I just think that they have to remember that, you know, fans want to buy this stuff. It's the economy is not good these days. We don't have $130 a season laying around to pop for sets that we already own on DVD in the first place.
Yeah,
a lot of us. So,
oh, and it's free on Netflix. So, and they really need to keep that in mind.
So we'll see. I do hope the price comes down. I really want to get the set. Like we said earlier, I especially want to see the drumhead, the extra 20 minutes or whatever it is, footage, so we can talk about that.
Well, it's an extra 20 minutes of Measure of a Man.
Oh, that's right. It's the Measure of a Man, not the drumhead. You're right.
Which I am very excited for.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to see that. I want to talk about it. So hopefully we can get our hands on this sometime soon.
Yeah.
Since the start of Voyager, fans wanted to find out a little bit more about the relationship between Captain Janeway and Commander Chakotay. And finally, near the end of the second season, Jerry Taylor promised to let us get a look at the tension between the two in the episode Resolutions, as the captain and her first officer, as the result of a bug bite, are forced to shack up on a planet in the Delta Quadrant. Although I'm not sure that we really got to see that relationship, so we'll talk about that today. And to help us do that, of course, Greg is here. Also with us is our managing editor and Voyager editor, Mistress Charlene Schmidt. Hello, Char.
Hello. Thank you for addressing with the proper title.
And joining us for the first time on the Ready Room is one of our Voyager writers, Lori Sears. Hello, Lori.
Hi.
Yay!
Welcome, welcome.
All right, so,
thank you.
I think this is the first time we've ever had two men and two women on the panel at the same time.
Yeah, now...
I think it is.
At this point, we need to all get out of our stasis pods exactly synchronous. So, three, two, one.
Correct.
I know. Three,
two, one. Okay, wake
Exit.
Up.
Exit.
Get up. Lift.
Yes. Lift.
Stand
turn
up.
Turn sideways. Step out.
And ta-da!
Exit. Look.
Yes.
I mean...
Oh, man.
Come on.
I give it a 9.5.
Yeah. Not bad.
Really? I think I said when I was watching that, you know, this should be an event in the Olympics.
Oh, definitely.
The Space Olympics.
Yes.
The Russian judge gives Chakotay a 9.2. Noting that his dismount was a little off.
It was
his
a little off.
His legs weren't totally straight. Toes weren't pointed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he could do better.
I mean, do they have this at Starfleet Academy? Do they have, like, stasis pod disembarkation training?
I think they do.
They must.
Right after the Kobayashi Maru, they sort of whisk you off in the middle of the night, stick you in a stasis pod, and just see how you react.
I can't wait till the next movie when Kirk has to get out of the stasis pod, and he just pops it open, and he's like, no problem. And then they ask Spock, who is that cadet who beat your test?
Yes. He opened
up. No idea. But I intend to find out.
That's right.
And then he bites the apple after he gets out. I mean, it's just going to be fantastic. It really is.
It should be good.
Well, I can't wait.
It's an interesting open to the episode, though, to like stick them on this planet and just be like, just go with it, guys. The captain and the first officer are on the planet. Apparently, they got bit by something. You know, if this were a TNG episode, it would have started way back. They would have been... you know, transporting a diplomat from blah, blah to blah, blah, and they did a quick stop off for a geological survey. And then they'd get bitten, and it'd be, you know, 25 minutes in the episode before they were down on the planet and actually trying to get them healed.
Right.
This
and
is then
they
true.
Would, yeah. They would have them down on the planet, and Pulaski would say, you know, I'd prefer to do this on the ship, but there's something about the planet that's keeping you alive. Right. So I've transported my tables down here. I'm going to scrap you down. I'm going to have you relive all the events of the first two seasons of Voyager.
That's right. And if you try to do a barrel roll and escape...
Do a barrel roll! The barrel roll press me or
I... That's it. I'm strapping you in.
Hard to do a barrel roll when you're strapped down. I've definitely learned that.
Well, you have, huh?
So let's jump in, okay? We're down on the planet. They're in these pods, kind of weird. They get out, and then you kind of quickly find out that, well, somehow they're stuck here and they can't leave this planet. And obviously, I don't know if you remember when this first aired, but I remember actually the promo spot on UPN for this in the week leading up to the episode very well.
Yes,
and
so much.
They used the whole, it's been an honor serving as your captain speech in the
speech.
Promo to try to set up the idea that as we were ending season two, Kate Mulgrew may be off the show.
Yeah.
Did you buy that for a second?
No, of course not.
No.
Hey, yeah, this is Voyager. I'm sorry. They just dealt with Tuvix right before this and the show's run. There was no way Janeway was leaving beyond this episode.
Yeah.
Right.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, especially not Janeway and Chakotay. I mean, they did it kind of successfully in Best of Both Worlds. I think they could have legitimately dropped Patrick Stewart and had Jonathan Frakes take over as captain. I mean, it would have been terrible and people would have revolted, but... They could have legitimately done that, but to lose the captain and the XO after two seasons, I mean, who are you joking, guys?
And let's not forget here now that Greg has dreams at night about writing Patrick Stewart off the show.
I really would love to. I think it's after about five seasons. It's just like, we really need to shake this up. Like, really. I don't know if we need to bring in a new actor to play Captain Picard or just get him off the show entirely. But,
okay, yeah. Which begs the question, who would you have come in for Sir Patrick Stewart?
Yeah, that is a good question. I'm not sure how you could recast him. Just, you know.
I don't know. I mean, Biff Yeager wasn't doing anything. So
that's true.
You could bring him in. You know,
so. No, I'm thinking of like Doctor Who, where the Doctor, you know, changes every 3 or 4 years.
Allons-y!
Just, you know, he dies and has to regenerate. And suddenly he's younger and has crazy hair.
And then we would be sitting on here talking about, you know, I really like the fifth captain a lot better, but the tenth captain, he's my captain.
No.
But back to this one, yes.
Okay, so Laurie, tell us for you, what was your first impression of where this might be headed in terms of, I mean, were you glad to see, like, here's a moment when maybe, you know, Chakotay and Janeway are forced together on this planet. Maybe we're going to actually get to see some kind, as the title suggested, some kind of resolution to this tension that we've been feeling for two seasons.
What was my thought? Oh, well, my thought was what you just said. I mean, where could they go but up from this point? I mean, they were eyeballing each other. They were, meaningful glances this for two seasons. He stared at her ass. She looked at his lips. I mean, good God. What are you going to do? What else could they do? But, yeah, okay. There was
those longing looks, man. Yeah, they did kind of play with the two a little bit. There was tension. There was a little bit of flirtation. I remember in Elogium where Janeway says, if I have any further problems with mating behavior or questions about mating behavior, I'll know where to go. That sort of a thing. And
he looked at her like, what the hell did you just say?
Right.
That was
But
funny.
He was open to the idea.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But you know she went back to her ready room and Googled mating rituals in Native
Google?
American cultures.
Right. Well, they sort of gave Janeway a boyfriend of some sort on Earth to sort of set her up. She's not like the single girl trying to make her way in the universe. Because they could have gone that direction. This is kind of the first attached captain. Because you had Kirk, who was just a bachelor. Picard was sort of your confirmed bachelor. Although, I guess Vash eventually And Cisco, finally, but
was attached.
Wait, Vash and Cisco.
Moving on to DS9, I'm saying Cisco's.
Oh, yeah, wait, oh, you're going through the cap. I'm sorry, there just
right.
wasn't much.
There was a comma.
I missed the comma.
No wonder there was. That no made, no okay. wonder they hated each other so much.
That would have made Pulis a much more interesting episode, I must say.
You remember what you did to me that time,
yeah.
John Luke.
Next on Jerry Springer.
But what I'm trying to say is Janeway starts the show. She's already got a boyfriend and a dog. She's not really looking for anything. So even though she's got this male first officer, she's not really interested. She's trying to get the crew home. So this is their first time where they're really dealing with Janeway, you know, possibly getting into a serious relationship. And of course, there's always those alternate versions of the episode. And who was it? Was it Kenneth Biller, who was working on the show at this point, who wanted this to be one of those time vortex episodes where it's, you know, Voyager comes back and it's 40 years later and Chakotay and Janeway have kids and they've got a whole community, which would have been an interesting idea. I'm really glad they didn't go in that direction. Because what do you do at that point?
I know. How would you fix that?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the part where they have the kids, but then the monkey is their butler. That was just totally not going to work.
Actually, I really want to see that.
They had 40 years to domesticate the monkeys.
I really want to see that. That monkey needs to be useful for crying out loud. All he does in this episode is distract the heck out of everybody and ruin the sexual tension that's building.
Right. Well,
I mean, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
That's my theory about the monkey, that he was part of the original pitch. Like, so they were going to have this whole episode. They're going to be 40 years on the planet. And then they were going to pitch a sitcom to UPN where it'd be Kathy and Coco and the monkey. And it'd be just a weekly sitcom about their misadventures. And every, you know, it's one of those, will they or won't they? They keep getting closer. Then the monkey shows up and does some antics, learns how to juggle.
Exactly.
I don't know. I just think they had the monkey.
Oh, exactly.
I think so.
So are we talking about the monkey now? Or are we going to go ahead and get the monkey out of the way? Okay, so
let's talk about the monkey. Because I just think they had him on contract. You know, he was on the UPN lot for about 5 days or so.
Right.
They needed him for only two on some other show. And so they've got this time left. Well, what do we do with this monkey? We've already paid for it. He's here. We got to use him somehow. We can't just send him back and lose our money. Let's put him on Voyager. We could do that. Sure. Hey, you guys, can you write this monkey into the script? Jerry Taylor says, yeah, sure, no problem. Why? Yeah,
there's no...
It's like, hey, look, Donna Visitor got pregnant, and we wrote that into the script. We can certainly write a monkey into the script. Come on.
Hey, you know, sometimes real life just demands certain changes on the page. That's all.
Right. I guess he's supposed to be, like, trying to help make Janeway feel at home, but never really does that. I've been trying to justify the monkey all day, and I cannot find a way to do it. He doesn't do anything interesting.
You know what? Greg, I've been doing the same thing.
Well, I have to say that, you know, after a long trip, when I come home, I love when I open the door and the monkey's in the Genkan. It just makes me feel so at home.
I've been trying all day to find out if he's some sort of a metaphor.
Right, exactly, yeah.
I can't do it.
Okay, wasn't she supposed to be doing some kind of research? Maybe they meant
to be... Well, yeah, she's playing scientist.
Right.
Right. Well, but you couldn't do animal testing. That would be horrible. People would go crazy. Right.
But she's trapping bugs.
She is, yeah.
But
bugs?
Animal testing in a sense.
Those are just bugs, though.
I guess, but, I mean, yeah.
My theory on the monkey is that, because clearly, I mean, now, we'll talk more about the overall story later, but I feel like Jerry wanted to actually tell a story about Janeway and Chakotay here, but Voyager wouldn't allow that story to be told. And I feel like the monkey was the crutch for the writers, that any time it started to get too serious between Janeway and Chakotay, the monkey would show up, and then Janeway would be distracted, and she'd, oh, the monkey's so cute. Look how he can reach out. He's hungry.
He's like peeping her while she's in the
That's
bath.
How I felt. It's like,
yeah.
Well, oh, now this is the other thing. I think what, at the beginning, I'm pretty sure that Chakotay and the monkey are in cahoots, because I think Chakotay wanted to get Janeway out of that bathtub and into a towel. And what better way to do it than to have this monkey show up and she forgets about the bath and she just hops right out. Look, monkey. It's like total ADD.
This
I gotta jump out of the bathtub here.
This is my theory. When you know, Janeway kept thinking, you know, maybe this monkey's actually, you know, sentient or, you know, a developing species. When Chakotay was sort of going off into the woods for his, you know, whatever he was doing secretly out there, what if he was having secret meetings with the monkey?
Exactly.
And they were conspiring with what they were going to, because this is my theory, my like grand theory for the episode, is that it's Chakotay trying desperately to get out of the friend zone.
Yeah.
He's been trapped in there for two seasons. He doesn't have a girlfriend back at home. And, you know, what are his other options? The Delaney sisters, they're already wrapped up with Tom Paris. So his only option is to make Kathy actually notice him for once.
Yeah, and he's trying so hard in this episode, is he not? I mean, okay, for one thing, if a guy builds you a bathtub...
for real.
That's usually a sign of his intentions, okay?
Okay, yes, but when he also builds headboards...
Yeah, not just the bathtub, headboards too. Yeah. Among the cooking, and I'm sure he was cleaning, and then he was building a boat later.
Right.
This is a devoted man. His intentions are very clear.
The
she just
swing
wasn't listening.
In the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
The handcuffs on the headboard.
Exactly. And he actually says to her, and what I do makes you uncomfortable, doesn't it?
Yes, and she says, and she basically admits that it does.
Yeah.
Because she's so steadfast on getting home at this point. That's all she cares about. Meanwhile, he's actually pretty okay with this whole situation they've landed themselves into. He's accepted it. He thinks, I could deal with this. I can handle this. I like this. I could spend the rest of my life with her.
Yeah, he's totally...
I'm cool with it.
He's the John Locke. You know, John Locke on Lost was just totally fine with being on this planet. He's like, my legs are healed. I don't have anybody back home to worry about. I'm going to make a life for myself here. Yeah, Chakotay just jumps into it. And Janeway hates it. Like, she can't think of a worse thing than to be trapped on the planet with Chakotay.
I don't know if I would take it that far. I think she's completely ignoring him until she absolutely has to acknowledge him. But the fact that she's stranded here on this planet when she needs to be commanding her ship, that's what's really torquing her off.
It drives her crazy. Yeah, she goes completely crazy. She wants to be... just gone. She doesn't want to be stuck there.
Well, and, you know, I think this is one thing I love about this episode is just how it shows how different our captain and first officer are on this ship. We've got Janeway, and she's really delving into her scientific background here, and she's the captain, she's a leader. This has been kind of taken away from her now, and how she's dealing with it as opposed to him, where his, like, I see his background more as far as, like, connections and family and stability. So for him, this is a good thing. It's a welcome thing. Whereas for her, it's very unsettling and it takes a lot of time to accept it. And she actually doesn't even start to accept it until she has to accept it when all of her science stuff gets destroyed.
Yeah, she's forced to accept it then. She doesn't have any choice. So
Right.
Do you think Chakotay is also in cahoots with the plasma storm?
Oh, totally. You know that the monkey and the clouds planned that together. They got together like, okay, what can we do to really just screw her up, man? How can we make this final?
Yeah.
Right. And that's what they did.
Well, in the cut scene where we find out that the plasma storm is John Locke, that was... Yeah. But, no, I mean, it's a good point, Char, that they are very different. I mean, because, and this is a point where the writers remembered that Janeway is supposed to be a scientist. I don't know, you know, who decided that Janeway is supposed to be a scientist, but she doesn't act like a scientist much of the time. She doesn't think
not most
like
of the
a
time.
Scientist.
Yeah.
But here, suddenly, oh, that's right. Kathy's a scientist, so she's going to find a cure to this disease herself, even though the doctor who's programmed with every doctor in Federation history has worked on it for a month and hasn't found anything.
But you know what? This is Janeway we're talking about, and if the plot would have enabled it, she would have done it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're talking about Jerry Taylor, you mean? Yeah. I mean,
well, Jerry, yeah, because right. I hate the fact that Jerry Taylor has to write Janeway as the Mary Sue. Janeway can do no wrong when Jerry Taylor's writing her. I mean, yeah, the reason why her science equipment gets destroyed is because Janeway would never give up on her own. She just wouldn't because that would be violating some major deep down principle of the Janeway character. She has no flaws as far as Jerry Taylor's concerned, which I find very unfortunate.
So you're saying that the when the equipment is destroyed by the plasma storm, that's actually what we're seeing on screen is that moment when Rick Berman walked in and ripped a page out of Jerry's notebook and said, look, enough with the damn science equipment.
I think it was a metaphor, yes.
Yes.
On the Janeway's a scientist tick, if we can talk about the ship a little bit, one thing I really noticed this episode is Voyager's a science vessel, but there's nobody on the ship in a science uniform. Other than the doctor, right? I mean, the doctor's got it. But everyone in the mess hall, everyone on the bridge, they're either red or yellow.
There is one person on the bridge, I think, who had on a science uniform. And every single person, like you said, that we saw was in gold or red. Yeah.
Ensign Wildman.
Yeah, Ensign Wildman gets to wear it. But it's none of the major characters. It's really, really bizarre.
Well, EMH.
But then the other thing is Tuvok doesn't switch to command. He leaves on his tactical uniform, and even when he's acting captain, they don't promote a first officer. If we can just talk about what happens on the ship, it's a mess. Like, I feel like that whole storyline was just thrown together.
I don't think Tuvok believes in first officers because he has that line where I think he's doing a captain's log and he says, it's been 6 weeks since we decided to leave behind Captain Janeway and the first officer. Like, Chakotay doesn't even have a name to him. It's like,
yes.
Tuvok is a little rude about that whole thing in this whole episode, is he not? Because first off, he cuts off Chakotay, doesn't let him say a farewell when they leave the planet.
Right.
But then he says the first officer in this really kind of condescending tone.
Well, he's always been at odds with Chakotay. It's been Janeway at the top, and Chakotay's been the first officer, but then Tuvok's sort of the shadow first officer. He's the one that Janeway goes to when she really needs advice, or if she's really doing something wrong, the only one she'll listen to is Tuvok. So he's happy to have him out of the way.
Yeah. At this point in the series, that's definitely true. Now, I think as the series goes on, she does rely on Chakotay a little more.
Yeah,
but
I think that's
true. But in season two, she's still with Tuvok more than anybody.
There are moments, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are moments.
Okay, but so we have Janeway send Tuvok away. You know, it's like, okay, we haven't found a cure. We're not going to. You guys need to keep heading home. My order to you is do not contact the Vidians. Don't try to save us.
Do not press the red button.
Right. It's like...
what are they going to do?
It's like, yes, exactly. Like, give them the order for the one thing you know they're going to do eventually.
Of course.
But Tuvok is like, steadfast. I'm going to absolutely follow what the captain said. If Picard had given Riker an order like that, I think Riker would have been able to make up his mind for himself. But it takes basically a mutiny on the ship to change Tuvok's mind.
Right.
Almost, well, right?
Before we get into to Captain Tuvok and the mutiny and everything, let's the other half. Okay, so Janeway is being the scientist, right?
Yeah.
So the other half of that is that we have Chakotay, who is very much at home in nature. He's very much the you know, let's live in the wilderness kind of guy. And so that's where the opposites attract part, you know, comes in here. And Greg, you mentioned in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
That you felt that maybe Robert Beltran actually liked this episode for once.
It looked like he was actually having some fun. He didn't have that perma scowl on his face that Beltran usually has. Like, he's finally given something to do. He's... You know, as you say, he's building a bathtub, he's building headboards, he's putting his leg up on things. He looks like he's finally actually having fun.
Yeah, he actually smiles. He gets to stare at Kathy's chest, which I think helps a little bit. Yeah. But he's enjoying himself. He's happy, you know, just kind of farting around the house a little bit and making his sand paintings or whatever it is he's doing, and life's good.
Yeah. He's a really good house husband. You know, Janeway says she doesn't
like
to cook. He loves to cook. So this is perfect.
Yeah, he calls in that recipe on the replicator like nothing.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Which reminds me, does he have a cool ditty to sing while he cooks, like Riker does?
Probably.
I don't know.
A scat off?
We didn't get to find out. Now I feel gypped.
Yeah, that is really a shame.
Yeah.
I bet they cut that out so they had more time for the monkey.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah. I bet they did.
Probably so. Probably so.
Darn monkey.
But so, Char, you feel like the two of them work well together as a team because of the opposite nature that they have.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally do. Because they balance each other out. I think Janeway is a little more, she has kind of a more mercurial nature. Like, once she puts her mind to something, that's it. That's the direction she's going. Boom. Whereas Chakotay is there to second-guess her and say, hey, now, wait a minute. Slow down just a little bit and consider this. And he's always there to point out the alternatives. Now, granted, as we go along in the series, she doesn't really acknowledge that a lot. She usually makes up her mind and says, well, that's great and all, but I'm doing this. But at least he's there to slow her down a little bit and make her think twice.
Do you think she's like, that's great and all? Because when Coco talks to Kathy in the ready room, it's kind of for me like, have you ever watched Martha Stewart's TV show? Do you know how Martha Stewart, she brings guests on and they stand next to her and she starts a conversation with them and like they're cooking, you know, ribs or whatever. And she's just like totally not listening to anything they're saying to her.
Yeah.
And they'll be in the middle of a sentence and then she'll be like, oh, you know, the other day I was at the store and I saw these really nice shoes and it's like,
I
you're not listening
Kathy.
To your guest at all. And that's kind of how I feel about Janeway when she and Chakotay have these meetings to discuss ship problems or, you know, what they're going to do to get home. So
she's not really listening to him that much.
Right.
She's thinking about that pair of shoes she wants.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how many replicator rations that takes, she will find a way to get them.
Mm-hmm. Or coffee.
A coffee. Yeah, forget the shoes. It's all about the coffee.
All right, so let's move on to Tuvok in the segment that I like to call Don't Let Your Vulcans Grow Up to Be Captains.
Seriously, like,
because, wow.
That kind of started
for
as, like,
real.
A joke with us, right? I mean, we're talking about T'Pol was not that great a captain. Spock never really wanted to be a captain. It really does seem to be true. Like, absolutely true. Tuvok is a really, really horrible captain. It starts with not making a first officer, so there's no one to listen to. You know, he doesn't have that dynamic where he can sort of take advice and internalize it. Even when they finally, you know, jumping to the end, come up with the plan to fight the Vidians, it's all him. Like, he doesn't consult with anyone. It's just, we're going to do this. It's like, Tuvok, you're supposed to have a staff meeting, figure out what we're going to do. No. It's Tuvok's like the dictator of Voyager now.
I was just going to say that his command is a dictatorship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think explains why he didn't put the extra pips on and change into a red uniform.
Didn't he put the pips on later on? Because I was watching for it. I felt like he had them on towards the end, but he didn't.
Never.
No. He never does.
But Harry refers to him as Captain Tuvok at one point, though, which I guess pissed him off. I don't know.
Right. Do you think he would have kept on saying, you know, acting captain's log the whole way home? Or would he eventually just
probably
let it go? I mean,
well,
does Chakotay do, you know, field promotion commander Chakotay's log?
Well, okay, this is alternate timeline. We would have had that great scene in Nemesis where the screen pops up and Picard says, oh, Acting Admiral Tuvok. You know,
right.
Oh, no. And he'd still be wearing the yellow uniform with two pips.
Right. With two pips.
Well, admirals do get to have a little bit of leeway on what uniform they choose, so that's the one that Tuvok
went
with.
This is true. We've talked about this, yes. He would default to
but
that.
But I just think that Vulcans don't make good captains. Yeah. You don't see many Vulcan captains. The ones I can think of are like the captain of the Saratoga that Sisko was on was a Vulcan.
Right.
And, well, we saw what happened to that ship. And I think Spock later Spock, like in The Undiscovered Country, I think Spock can make a good captain, because at that point he, I talked about this last week, I think, you know, he's much wiser. He's not Vulcan at that point. But these people who are really just Vulcans, they can't. I mean, we saw what happened with T'Pol. I mean, she gets in a little bit of trouble, so she decides to ram another ship and knock a warp nacelle off the Enterprise. Yes.
Not logical.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
So, not good captains.
Not to get back into the speciesist thing that we sort of got onto last week, but I think you kind of do need to be a human to run a starship. You need to have that gut instinct that they seem to say only humans have. You've got to have the heart. And it all of those traits is something that Star Trek kind of shows that humans have, and Vulcans are really, really lacking in them. The one case is Data, who kind of did make a good captain. Which episode was that? Was that Redemption or Unification, where he sort of had that, that subplot where he got to be captain for maybe 5 or 10 minutes? He actually did manage to be a good captain. But most of the time, anytime you put anybody other than a human in charge, things go downhill.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's certainly a bad track record.
I don't know if I would say human, but you at least have to have emotions.
Yeah. It's like Vulcan's the worst. Yeah. The worst possible
Vulcan
thing
is
to put
the
in
worst.
Charge
okay.
of a ship.
I've got it. I think the Vulcans are so bad because they are completely ruled by logic.
Well, that's
anybody
it,
else can do a little bit better than that because their guiding principles aren't so rigid. But for them, that's all they see, that's all they know, that's all they do. It's a much more linear course of action, and you miss a lot of things that way.
Well, for
Whereas
him,
with humans, we're all over the place.
Yeah, for him in that episode, it was either being the tough guy the whole time, never giving in, until he finally just caved, and he wanted to be their buddy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what I noticed. He just, okay, I give up. I can't deal with this anymore, so we'll do what you
want. And Kes of all people did that.
Oh, yeah.
Finally made him cave.
That's what my wife said after the thing. They walked out of the conference room, and she said, why can Kes get through to Tuvok?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, he's so rigid. Oh, but Kes goes in, and then, well, now everything's okay. And then...
Oh, but they were boiling water together earlier in the season,
remember?
They're bonded.
I know,
Yep. What did she boiled him?
I can't count the number of times, you know, when I've been kind of rigid about something and someone boiled water with me and then I...
Well, it's about as exciting as the handhold Janeway and Chakotay have later.
Right.
You know,
well,
the tear streams down her cheek. And
that's what I was about to say.
It's supposed to be... Oh.
This episode
and then they
cut
the monkey.
This episode is all about, like, the kind of not good enough speech. Like, it's Kes coming in with, like, the heartfelt speech about her father. Chakotay with that BS he made up off the top of his head. I mean, all of us have done this, right? Where we're out on a date with a girl and we're not really impressing her, so we just sort of make up some ancient prophecy or ancient story.
That's how I got my husband.
Well, exactly. So there you go.
I mean, how else are you supposed to do it? I don't know any other way, because I took all my dating and relationship advice from this episode and from Star Trek. Which
okay, while we're talking about the ancient
no,
legends,
I did not.
Yes,
I have to tell you this. When that came on, okay, I haven't watched this episode in a while before watching it twice yesterday, and I had forgotten that Coco's just making up a story here. So when he says, "I'm not sure I can define parameters, but I can tell you a story." And I thought, oh, great. He's just going to make up some crap like he always does. And of course, sure enough, he admits that he's making it up. But you know, the original script, I found this, and the original script for this episode is very interesting. And I think it shows just how he feels about Kathy.
A little bit. It goes a little bit further.
It does. It took several takes. He says, I'm not sure I can find parameters, but I can tell you a story and an ancient legend among my people. It's about a crazy woman warrior who stranded her people in the Delta Quadrant. I mean the jungle. And then
wait a minute.
He says, I'm not sure I can define parameters, but I can tell you a story, an ancient legend among my people. It's about a caffeine-addicted woman who never listens to her first officer. I mean her doctor. And then, as if that's not enough, he says, I'm not sure I can define parameters, but I can tell you a story, an ancient legend among my people. It's about a female starship captain who makes eyes at me. And then Janeway says, is that really an ancient legend? And he says, no, but that made it easier to say. And yeah. I mean, that's how it was going to go down. But maybe the way they played it worked better overall for the
actually,
story.
Actually, can we talk seriously for about like 5 seconds? Because there actually was an alternate version of this script where Kathy and Coco do end up kissing at the end of this scene. It goes a little bit differently. Hmm. And there's a little more tension, and then there's obviously that quote-unquote resolution. So, apparently it got cut out for what could probably be cited for multiple reasons, either because Kate Mulgrew was not terribly interested in having Janeway enter into some kind of relationship at all with Coco. And she said that many times mm-hmm. in conventions and whatnot, because the writers were kind of pining for that sort of thing, and she has said, I had to put my foot down and no way was that going to happen, because she didn't want Janeway to be in a long-term committed relationship, which I see her point, and yet I think they missed a really big opportunity there. And Laura, you and I have talked about this a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Because, we've got the opportunity with a female captain. And let's face it, there is a demographic that's not really been represented very well in Star Trek at this point, and it is the lady who is managing her personal life, her career, maybe family, children, who knows? Yeah. They could have taken that if they would have been brave enough. And I know they were going for the demographic of the 18 to 35-year-old male, thinking, oh, that's where it's at. Okay, well, you know what? A lot of the people that were watching Voyager were women.
They missed out. They really screwed that up. They totally did.
They really did. They missed
out on
something. These were
the
mothers. These were the women managing this sort of thing. And could you imagine what kind of a role model Janeway could have been to them? So they kind of messed that up a little bit. I see both ways, and yet I really would have enjoyed seeing this possible scenario being played out with Janeway. Well, if they would have done it right. But then
that's
here's the thing.
Point. That's the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, right? I mean, look what we have. Look at the writers we have. I mean, those people, good God, they couldn't write themselves out of a paper bag half the time. So, I mean,
yeah.
Seriously.
Do you want Jerry Taylor writing Janeway in a long-term Harlequin romance like she's got in this episode right here? In that sense, I don't blame Kate Mulgrew one bit. Had the writers had a little more skill, and if they could have handled it a little more tactfully, I think they would have had something, and she would have been a little more open to it, thinking, okay, this is really brave, this is going to work, and we're going to do something different here. I can roll with that. But as it was, I really can't say I blame her.
Yeah.
I don't.
Well, it
could, I don't.
It is an interesting idea. Like, what if this was the episode that started the relationship between Janeway and Chakotay that continued throughout the series, and they get married in season 5, and, you know, Janeway's, you know, barefoot and pregnant during the finale. Like, I don't know if that's the direction I want the show to go in.
I don't know if we need to go that far.
But
I think the whole confrontation with the Borg Queen would have been really interesting in that situation.
That really would have. I don't know if they needed to go that far, but it would have been nice to have seen her change from, we mentioned earlier, she is engaged to Mark.
Right.
And at this point in the series, as far as we know, she's still committed to him, even though she's so far off. But then, as time goes by, this opportunity comes up, and she starts falling for him just a little bit, thinking, well, what if?
Yeah.
And that could have been season 3. And then, I'm sorry, you know what? Whether they would have gotten together or not, I really think they needed to acknowledge what they did here in this episode.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Yes.
There is absolutely no quote-unquote resolution.
No,
why is
never.
This episode titled that? Right. It drives me insane. There's no resolution, only questions.
Yeah.
So, what the hell? Yeah. at some point, they needed to just confront each other like two adults. Let's not define parameters. Let's not tell ancient legends. Let's just be straightforward human beings for a second, okay? And say, look, we obviously feel a little something for each other. There's something going on here. This is what human beings do. and let's acknowledge it and let's decide what we're going to do about it. Had they just decided, like if Janeway would have said, you know what, as the captain of this ship, I really am not comfortable being in a relationship because I've got so much responsibility on my shoulders. I don't feel like I could do both at the same time effectively. What if I had to send you to your death?
Yeah.
That sort of a thing. You know, that, if that was too much for her, I would completely understand. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted to see that on the show. And we
just
never
say
got it.
Yes. Yeah. Just say it.
You want to have the you want to have that conversation.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the other option, you know, you either have them get together and continue, or have them get together and it doesn't work. Like, let's show why Chakotay and Janeway shouldn't get together. And by the end of the episode, they just agree, look, we shouldn't be together. This is why. That's a resolution. You know, maybe it wouldn't make all of the shippers happy, but at least we would have reached something.
It would have been something, and it could have been a morality play even, like, this is why you don't date your coworkers.
Uh-huh.
You could have done that.
Definitely.
And you know what? I think those two, they would have been able to go on in a command type of relationship and continue with that without the personal aspect of it just fine. But they didn't do anything, and they kind of just kept dipping their feet in the pool a little bit with flirtation as the seasons went by. Just here and there, really cherry-picked.
Yeah.
And nothing absolutely comes of it. And then in season 7, Chakotay starts kissing on 7. What the hell?
Yeah.
Okay, I've said my piece, you guys. I'm sorry. Someone else take the floor.
Well, what got me is, I guess we're kind of jumping around a little bit here about the relationship, because I did want to talk about that. I thought this episode was supposed to be about the relationship between Kathy and Coco, but it really, I never felt like it was. I noticed that at the point where they really started to get into the situation that they had found themselves in, where they're having to live together in this house on this planet, and they might have to stay there forever, and they seem to have these feelings for one another, there were 13 minutes left in the episode at that point. And I felt like it, that is when they actually got into what the story should have been about in the first place, and then they still don't go anywhere with it.
It's
superficial. It's completely superficial. And as soon as they try to talk about it, you know, Chakotay gets into his little ancient legend farce, and then I don't know. They go outside, and the monkey does his little stretch routine, and it's like, and then they, this is the one. Yeah, they start talking about it, and as soon as they start talking about something serious, they cut back to the ship, so that Tuvok and them can go meet the Vidians. And I said Tuvok can talk up the Vidian woman with some sexy tech, you know. And this really got me too. This is so Voyager, completely Voyager here.
It is, isn't it?
Tuvok contacts Dinara, the Vidian doctor, as Greg calls her, Dr. House.
Yes, Dr. House, where she basically just says, I'm not sure what it is, but it's not space lupus.
And I have the cure right here. So
exactly. Okay. Yeah, I have the cure right away.
But Tuvok, I mean, how realistic is this? You're traveling at high warp, and you contact another ship, and it's the first time that you're going to speak face-to-face with this person, and you say, they were infected by a virus after being bitten by insects on a planet approximately 70 light years from here in a system with a yellow dwarf star. And Dinara says, the third planet in a system of 7? Tuvok, yes, Dinara, I know it well. Like, what? How do you know?
Yeah. What?
What?
That's like they were both in the same Denny's, you know, in some like remote Alabama town. Like, oh yeah, I totally, you know, Jerry behind the counter. Yeah. Yeah, he's got a bit of an infection. I developed a cure.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. That is what it is. It's crazy. It's ridiculous.
Just let me ask you, I mean, I don't want listeners to think I'm ragging so much on Voyager, because I do like Voyager. I mean, I like all Star Trek. I like Voyager. But there are just some of these moments where, from a writing standpoint, I feel like, think about what you're writing for a minute. You know, what the reason people love Star Trek as a future, as opposed to, say, something like Star Wars, which is a mythology, is that you can feel like maybe this is a real world. Mm-hmm. You know, you feel like, yeah, this could be our future. We could actually live in this. And so think about what you're writing and think about, does this actually make any sense? And yeah. This is a moment where I feel like they're so caught up in the whole space future technology thing that they forget that these are supposed to be real people and it's supposed to be a real world. And it doesn't make any sense what you're saying here. Yeah. But let me just ask you guys, for you, when things like this happen on the show, does it affect how you watch the episode? Does it pull you out of what's going on? Is it just me? Am I just crazy old Chris? I don't know.
Patting your
it's going to be a new character on the show. Crazy old Chris is going to come in.
Crazy old Chris. Right. It's just too convenient. Things don't happen like that in reality. Yeah. It's very off-putting when things just come together like a little cookie-cutter world, and it's not like that. I mean, if there's something wrong with you, it's not that easily fixed. You might have to see 17 doctors before they can figure out what the problem is. And this, she instantly knows where they are, what the problem is. And I have the cure right here. Yeah. Let me send it to you.
Right.
That makes no sense.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's way too convenient.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, and it's the fact that they had this solution at the beginning that, you know, we could go and ask the Vidians. No, don't do that. It's not even that they were like, they left and 3 months into it, they were like, you know, we really could ask the Vidians. Maybe we should try that. Like, they could have gone this whole direction of they're trying, even though they've left the captain behind, they're still trying new avenues. No, all they do is they do the thing that they should have done in the beginning. I mean, they're Voyager. They get through scrapes. Like, even if the Vidians attack, they'll probably find some way to get out of it. Why are we just abandoning them on the planet, especially when the solution is so clear? And then to make it so simple. That's
mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, it should have been Tuvok's search for how he can save the captain. Like, maybe Janeway had said, you know, no matter what, don't worry about us. Just take the crew home. And he's fighting it. Like, he wants to go back and save them. And he's trying all these different things. And it's destroying him. And let's do something interesting like that. Not this very cookie-cutter B-plot.
Oh, that would have been so awesome. Compared mm-hmm. to what we got.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, it is way too simplified.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from don't press the red button to we got this plan when we get into the Vidian battle of, okay, step one, you know, we're going to put the shields down. Step two, we're going to beam the serum over. Step three, we're going to inject the antimatter container. Then, Mr. Kim, step four, you're going to shoot the photon torpedo. I mean, really? You have to explain that?
Step five, B'Elanna, do a barrel roll.
Do a barrel roll. The barrel roll. Press me or
yeah, thank you.
I just picture up on the view screen, there's like this big display countdown yes. where it puts a giant one in the step and they do it. And then number two comes up in the step. Yeah.
They might as well. Man. I mean, really?
And, you know, I don't have a problem. I actually like the fact that they brought Dinara back and that they mm-hmm. contacted the Vidians because
yeah.
it's one of those rare moments on Voyager where they actually are trying to reference a past episode and create a thread through the series.
Continuity.
Wow.
Oh, amazing. And so I like that they went there, but
yeah,
it's just the way they handled it. And how many times on Star Trek have we been forced into some convoluted solution because they can't drop the shields? And yet here they're surrounded by like six Vidian ships that are
right.
actually firing on them continuously, but they're able to not only drop the shields long enough to beam the cough syrup aboard, but
cough syrup.
Nothing happens. The ship doesn't shake. No one on the bridge.
No.
There, nothing happens while the shields
no.
are down. It's
yeah, absolutely nothing. That really bothered me this time. I noticed that and thought, wait a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, too easy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, way too easy. I mean, it is like a fleet of Vidian ships. I mean, that kind of is the thing about the Delta Quadrant. They're not really that powerful in the Delta Quadrant. They're kind of the,
mm-hmm.
it's the weak quadrant. They're like 100 years behind in technology. But still, they get out of that scrape way too easily. The one thing, while we're talking about the ship, I did want to mention, I love the lighting. You know, Voyager very often has very flat, very standard lighting. But they actually do some really interesting stuff this time, especially on the ship, where things are very much in shadow. You know, when Tuvok's by himself, you know, his whole face is in shadow. Kim, even stuff on the bridge is very dark. I love that. It felt like DS9. You know, it didn't have, as we said, the grates in front of it like DS9 has, but it did feel more darker, and I thought that was really cool.
It did.
Yeah, just because Janeway and Chakotay are gone.
Right.
That's why. That makes it all better.
They're in funeral mode. Emo Harry.
Right. Everyone's got a single tear.
Handle it.
Talking about that, I mean, why don't we talk a little bit about Emo Harry and the Mutiny Zoom?
Yes.
Because
I
was so waiting for the Mutiny Zoom.
Yeah.
And not just Harry, but even Tom's reaction. Like, Tom's just looking over, like, shaking his head, like, don't do it, Harry. Just walk away.
Yeah, you know it's bad when the guy who's been in prison before is telling you to back off.
Right.
You're going too far.
He's like, you know, there were some badasses in that penal colony, but you're messing with Tuvok now, and he's going to cut you down.
Just don't do it. Yeah, meanwhile, Emo Harry's throwing a temper tantrum because he's got the mommy issues, right? I miss Janeway. Who's going to, you know, who's going to take care of me? Who do I go to for guidance? I'm going to suck my
thumb. Who's going to come to my clarinet concert next Friday?
Yeah, so he might as well have just shoved his hair in front of his face, gotten all emo, switched to a completely black uniform with black nail polish, and looked more the part, because that's pretty much
awesome
what he was doing.
Actually, you know, I was thinking yesterday, we were thinking that it would have been really awesome if the monkey had actually been a main cast member, had been on the ship, is like Lieutenant Monkey. How cool would it have been if Lieutenant Monkey and Emo Harry in his black uniform were like pals? They're like bosom buddies on the ship.
Now there's your sitcom idea.
That's perfect.
Yeah, there you go.
Love it. Let's do that. Okay.
It's like Scotty and Keenzer. I totally see that happening.
Yeah. How could that pilot not get accepted by NBC or wherever?
Well, no, first we have to sell it to the BBC. We have to let the BBC do it. And then American networks will say, can we remake this for American television? Because, you know,
the monkey will be played by Lucy Liu.
Wow.
Exactly.
Okay. Oh, man. Yes.
So how about the mutiny, though? You know, I mean, you can't have a mutiny on a starship.
I know. There's never been a mutiny on a starship. Except in those times when there was kind of a mutiny. Never, ever. That would never happen.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, it feels like the crew of Voyager, led by Harry, of all people, kind of gets into this mode where they're a bunch of little toddlers throwing their tantrum until they get their way.
And
with
they,
Captain
and then
Tuvok.
They do. It's like, Kim's like, I want to do this. And Tuvok shoots him down. So he goes to the mess hall and starts like whispering. Like, is this really how they train you at the academy? Like, when your captain relieves you of duty, like, go to the mess hall and start whispering, saying, you know, maybe the captain's wrong. Maybe we should just sort of take over. You know,
and then who shows up? Neelix comes over.
Yes.
Oh, am I missing something here?
That was my favorite moment.
Of course, Neelix has to butt in.
That was my favorite moment.
Cucumbers, is something going on I should know about?
And then Kim tells him,
"Neelix, and chop your cucumbers. Go away. God, quit butting into everybody's business, you damn troll."
And then Kim tells him, "You know, I have what may be the best idea ever." And then it cuts to Kim sort of in darkness coming into Tuvok's quarters. I almost expect him to pull out a knife and just go all mirror universe on him.
That would have been awesome. Especially in that nightie Tuvok was wearing.
Yes.
The purple nightie, that was hot.
And then Neelix says, well, maybe it's not that Tuvok is being torn away from the crew. Maybe the crew is being torn away from Tuvok.
Oh.
And Harry says, "You're a genius, Mr. Neelix."
Hey.
Because, you know, he always
well,
has
right,
these
yeah.
solutions to
harkening
him.
Back to Threshold. Neelix, you're a genius.
So you didn't like Tuvok's purple robe? I thought I liked the lighting in Tuvok's quarters.
It.
The purple lights, the purple robe.
It was hot.
I could hang out in those quarters.
I like the shoulder pads in the robe.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, those two.
They were hot.
That shows that he has acting admiral potential.
There you go.
This is true. That's absolutely true.
Do you think he came up with the PowerPoint to save the ship during one of his meditations? Like, I feel like a Vulcan captain spends half this time on the bridge and half of this time just meditating, figuring out what he's going to do. Tuvok loves it in there with the candles and the lights turned down.
Yeah. That's how he stays sane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you've got Janeway in the bathtub. You've got Tuvok with the candles. How do you think Chakotay relaxes?
His sand art, of course.
Oh, his sand art. Yes, so we haven't talked
chest.
About that yeah. yet. What's he doing with the sand? It's like he's trying to keep himself distracted. Okay. He's like, I know Janeway's out there in the bathtub. I know it, but I'm not going to think about it.
Yeah,
I'm here with my sand, and the sand is very important.
The dumbest little thing ever.
Focus on the sand.
Focus on the
Focus
sand.
Focus on the sand. I'm gonna rate
my
here.
Sand to your sand. Your grains
I'm gonna
to
rake
my grains.
The sand.
Yes, I'm raking the sand. I'm making designs in the sand. Chakotay's chest. The sand. I'm thinking about this.
Maybe
the sand.
Maybe
towels.
I can use the sand to do a little mapping and figure out how to get off this planet.
There we go.
I don't know what the heck he was doing, but I like your ideas better than whatever it was he concocted.
Yeah.
Because it just, it was really dumb looking. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Let's not let that guy run anything.
My cat could do better, okay?
I think Chakotay has like a, he has like a big conference with all his animal guides. That's how he relaxes. I just see them all sitting around in the woods, you know. That's probably it.
Yeah.
So, maybe. Speaking of the bathtub, I thought... You know, every Star Trek episode should have a bathtub scene.
Yes.
They should. Mm-hmm. Every episode should have an Andorian fight and a bathtub scene.
And a bathtub scene?
Yes.
Yeah.
Certainly Voyager, at the very least.
Well, they had a few.
They really had
Neelix in the bathtub. Janeway's in the bathtub a couple times. We could make this a regular thing.
Sure. What's crazy is they have their sonic showers, but then they have actual bathtubs. Like, they don't have a sonic bathtub. Yes, that would be very bizarre to look at on screen and probably couldn't get past the sensors.
It would be great.
But
there would be the hairy bathtub scene where he's still in his uniform, but he's in the water. Cause he's...
You are doing it wrong. we all know that the bathtub was just a convenient excuse for Coco to get a glimpse at Kathy's side boob.
Yeah, it's like this whole episode was like these two warring plots. Like, usually the A story and the B story are kind of working together, or at least they're completely different. And it's just, we need a little bit of extra time to fill. This is a case of every time one story starts getting a little interesting, the other one takes over. It's like we don't get to do anything interesting with Tuvok as captain and the mutiny and the Vidians because we have to spend time on the planet. And we don't have time to do anything interesting on the planet because we have to keep coming back to Tuvok and the mutiny and the Vidians.
Yeah, I feel like emotionally this episode is all over the place. Mm-hmm. Like you said, once it starts getting good, that's when they cut to the next scene. And it's just a total waste of time. It's just like, it's like Janeway's wardrobe changes in this episode, because she changes more clothes than a Barbie doll.
Yes.
Did you notice that? How many dresses she wore? And then she's in like the brush or the branch throwing away outfit, whatever you want to call that.
Oh,
I mean,
add that to
and then
the
she's
list,
in
Greg.
Her purple nightie, the long nightgown.
Yes.
And you know what? Okay, here's, I think, a very missed opportunity. What if they would have had the back rub scene where she's in the pink nightie and the bathrobe for that?
Oh.
Eh? Coco might have been a little less able to restrain himself.
Maybe.
And then we could have had something happen here.
The correct analogy here is that Janeway changes costumes more often than Greg and I are going to do at Star Trek Las Vegas
next
summer.
Exactly.
And that's a lot. And that's a lot.
That's quite a bit.
But no, seriously, the wardrobe designer, Bob Blackman, I mean, he went to town on this thing. My gosh.
Yeah, and you got to figure that's a case of they're finally out of the pajamas. Let's get him in as many non-pajama things as possible.
Right. Yes. So, she's in dresses. Chakotay's in those really nice wide open neck.
Oh, I love
tops.
Chakotay's outfits. I mean, I kept waiting for him to put on Picard's, you know, too short robe from Ryza. He never quite did that. He was always, I thought he looked pretty good. for once.
No, he did look good. He did look good.
He looked nice.
Yeah, he looks nice in civvies. Yes, he does.
Kept waiting for the Chakotay bathtub scene, which never happened.
Another missed opportunity. Yes. We could have had the monkey conspire with Janeway to get Chakotay out of the tub.
You see, if they'd cut down on the B plot, so many things could have happened.
I know, right? All these shenanigans we missed out on. Oh, such a shame. What a waste. This is why fanfic is such a beautiful thing.
It is.
So,
definitely.
Greg, you know, I know we're almost done with the Rainn Robinson and Janeway slash fic, but I think we ought to just table that for a little moment and work on this.
Well, you know, they were on the planet for a long time. So there's a lot of stuff we never got to on screen. I guess it's probably time for us to get to, did they or didn't they? You know, we saw them hold hands.
Yeah. And let's talk about this.
My theory is that the hand holding is a euphemism. It's one of those things where it's TV, it's, you know, 8 o'clock. We're not going to really get down and dirty. But by showing them hand holding, I think that's sort of a wink and a nod from the writers. But what do you guys think?
I think so. I think I agree with you. I mean, you were there how long? 12 weeks?
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, that totally makes sense that they would have gotten together. I mean, I think it happened.
I mean, there's no holodeck to go to. That's typically what you do when you're lonely on the starship and you don't have, you know, nobody's around. You just go to the holodeck. They don't have that option.
They don't have anything else to do.
Yeah, pretty much.
And they're the only two human beings on the planet, period. I mean, on the ship, it was constricted enough. Now you're down to two. Mm-hmm. And, okay, we've got a heterosexual male and a heterosexual female.
Right.
I think that what happened on New Earth stayed on New Earth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's just my personal belief. That's what I want to believe in my own little personal canon. They totally hooked up. However, I do think, you know, I always have this thought, like, if Tuvok would have just shut his trap for 5 more days, Janeway would have really, we would have really seen her fall head over heels.
Yeah.
And then we would have had to have addressed it on the show. But, no, they had that nice little one-night stand. I mean, after she cried after the ancient legend, and they had that euphemism of holding hands, and then the headboards kind of just, you know, rocked against the wall a little bit.
It's like
it happened. It happened.
In the Truman Show where they sort of, they just show, you know, the curtains waving. They don't really show anything.
Yeah, it's like that. It's the euphemism. Absolutely. Yes. You can't take that away from me. It really did happen. They just, it's the wink and the nudge. Believe what you want to believe, but that's what I believe.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to be a dissenter, Chris?
I don't know. Nah, I probably agree with you. I mean, you guys have made a strong case for for it. But when Tuvok comes back and he says that we plan to be in orbit within 30 hours, and it's just the look on Chakotay's face. It's just this kind of sigh.
Oh, shit.
It's like a Trill Ensign, isn't it?
Well, he was just... He was just disappointed that they only got the one time. You know, it's like Dr. Horrible says, you know, or no, it was Captain Hammer. You know, the second time you get to do the weird stuff. You know, he only got one chance with Janeway, and he had so many ideas.
Yeah, there were so many opportunities here with the replicated handcuffs on the headboard. Yeah. I mean, it could have gone in so many more directions. That was just the start.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the next thing he was building was the handcuffs. So, dang, man.
There are a lot of animal guides. And, you know, he had a lot of ancient techniques from his tribe.
Exactly.
That he wanted to tell Janeway about.
Is that an actual ancient technique from your tribe? Or are you just making that up? All right. You caught me.
No, but it made it easier to do.
No, but that made it easier to do.
That's right. Exactly. I have to write this down.
Or who knows? So, you know, we know so little about Chakotay's tribe. Maybe they have their own version of the Kama Sutra. Who knows?
You never know.
It could go either way.
There's the ancient art of tying knots that my tribe has.
But he has the sigh, and actually, you know, and my wife said, he would have preferred to stay on the planet and give massages to his captain.
Yeah.
That was the take. That's the takeaway from the whole scene. Yeah. So,
and Chakotay spends the whole rest of the series sort of wistfully thinking back on his time on New Earth. And maybe that's why Chakotay never really bought into the whole thing and never really ends up doing anything, because he's stuck in the past.
You know what I think he did is, like, he took the holo imager right before they left in those 30 hours, and he's got a holodeck program on New Earth where he's got his holographic Catherine.
Oh, man.
It's just enough to keep him happy.
It's like Riker spending all this time on the Enterprise holo novels. Every time we don't see Chakotay,
Minuet or something. He's...
That's where he is.
Yeah, that's where he is. That's what he's doing. The poor guy, because he knows now that they're back on the ship, it's hopeless.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like they're not even going to have, you know, they're not even going to have like a sort of booty call relationship. She makes it very clear. we're done. Like, you're back to being Commander Chakotay.
She does, too. It's all business. Does.
She shuts him right on down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on down.
That's what bothers me about that last scene with this, is the way that they act on the bridge. And I was trying to think about it. I'm thinking, okay, now how much time has passed between when they beam up and when they actually come in to onto the bridge and sit down? You know, has it been days? Have they been in sick bay with the doctor?
Right.
You know, has it been hours? Did he just hypospray them and they're okay?
Yeah.
Because that's how things tend to work in Star Trek.
I don't know.
But I felt like maybe I can feel like there's this little bit of discomfort there. But I wanted that to be explored a little bit more. And then in subsequent episodes, I wanted that to be explored a bit more. And it's not. And
it's not.
That's another way where I felt let down at the end.
Yeah. She did look at him right before they were getting ready to beam up. She did look at him like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is over. Mm. In a way.
Oh, yeah.
I took it to be
up.
That.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But after
that,
when they're on the bridge,
then after that, nothing.
Yeah.
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 So. Yeah. Nothing at all.
And Chakotay looked like, I can't believe this is over either. Thank gods I grabbed that holo emitter.
Yeah, so we...
That's right.
Exactly. So we leave the episode completely unresolved. That's the crazy thing about this, that the only resolution they came to is that Janeway's done with Chakotay, apparently, but we don't know why, we don't know really what happened, we never really get to explore their feelings. And it's and that's the disappointment.
And
I don't know,
just,
you know, the Delta Quadrant book, the sort of guide to Voyager, gives this a 1 out of 10, and I think that's strong.
Wow. There,
that's you know
harsh.
That's threshold numbers.
That's harsh.
Yeah,
but it does, you know, it fails its core principle. You know, Brian Finifter's podcast Down in Front talks about the perfect movie. And it's not that it's the most amazing thing ever done. It's, did it set up a premise and then follow through on it? And this is a show that does not. It says, we're going to explore Janeway Chakotay, and then just completely fails every bit of it. And that's why it's a very, very unsatisfying episode of Voyager.
This is true. Yeah, no follow through at all.
No, it didn't do anything it set out to do, really. I mean,
now that you make that point, 1 out of 10 is not so bad.
That sounds fair to me.
I think 1 out of 10 is harsh, but when we decided to do this episode, I went into it. I was looking forward to it. I was like, oh yeah, this is the Kathy Coco Shackle episode, and maybe we're going to find out, you know, like find out something about the relationship, because, you know, last week we did Children of Time and we had this great exploration of Kira and Odo and the other characters too, and it had been quite a long time since I watched this episode, and as I got into it I realized, you know, wait, yeah, we actually don't explore anything that we set out to explore in this episode.
No.
And then I got to the end and I was really frustrated by it. I was like, you know, this was a really good concept, but they just completely failed in what they were trying to do.
And you know what? If they would have at least set things up in this episode and then had some follow through later, I think I'd regard it a lot better than I do. Because I love to hate it. This is kind of a nostalgic favorite for me, I've got to confess. Because way back when it was first airing, I mean, I really was one of those people who thought, you know what, those two really should have a relationship. I was one of those relationshipper people, you know, back in the day. I read the fan fiction, you name it. I loved it. I ate up every little ounce of it. And I had some small hope that it would actually happen, too. I mean, I was far too optimistic. But, you know, I would hang on every little whim, every little touch, every little line, whatever they would throw at us. And eventually I did grow bored of it just because nothing did happen. But for the longest time, I was one of those people. So as horrible as the episode is, it's kind of like a guilty pleasure for me. Because, I mean, it's nostalgic value for me just because of the things it reminds me of and how much of a good time I had with it. You know, I remember the summer of 96, I was just, you know, reading and writing fan fiction galore. Right. It was a great time when I was 15. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess it's just disappointing that the show itself doesn't quite live up to my expectations for what it was. Because I had that too, that I remember this being a fun episode. I wish they'd spent more time on the planet having fun. Not even necessarily having sex, just doing fun things together. Let's see them explore their relationship. Let's see them get closer so that, you know, in seasons three and forward, you know, they've got a closer relationship, which they never really did. They were always at odds. Janeway doing her science stuff, Chakotay building stuff. They never advanced.
Yeah, they could have done so much more. It's like a lot of Voyager, just a bunch of wasted potential.
Yeah.
Truthfully.
Hate to leave it on that sour note, but that's just the truth.
Well, I mean, it's how it played out.
It was.
Yeah. So is there anything we haven't touched on that we wanted to touch on, or shall we give our final thoughts here?
Yeah, I think I've pretty much given my final thoughts. It's it's a depressing episode because it doesn't go far enough. I guess the one thing I would say is at least it did give Ensign Kim a thing to do for once. And I do think he was right. Like, they shouldn't just leave the captain behind. They should explore every opportunity. I just hate the way it played out with, as Char says, them just being little whiny toddlers about it. But at least, yeah, you've got Ensign Kim doing something interesting in the episode. I just, wish they'd had time to explore that concept more fully.
I don't think I have a whole lot more to add than what I just said not that long ago. I kind of love to hate the episode. It's all over the place, really, emotionally for me, just by the way it's written, by the way it's cut. It, you know, objectively, it doesn't do much for me at all. And it's only the nostalgic value that I really like this episode. That's all it has for me at this point, because I see what a hot mess it is. And I'm sorry, that is that. I'm done.
It is. I don't know. I think I have to agree with what you said at the beginning, Chris, that I think Jerry Taylor had a good idea, and I think people wanted that. They wanted to see that relationship, but then the follow-through, God help them, was such a mess.
Yeah, I guess my final thoughts on it are that I don't think it's a horrible episode, but it's an utterly unsatisfying episode. And I think it depends on what you're looking for in Star Trek. Clearly, we are not the same audience as a lot of Star Trek fans, because there are a lot of Star Trek fans, you know, you hear them complain about a particular episode because it didn't have enough space battles in it, or, you know, they didn't get to see the ship exterior enough. You know, everyone has their own thing, and that's great. That's why Star Trek is so popular. If you are like us and you're looking for the character relationships, the interactions, and you want to see follow through and consequences, and you're looking in at life through Star Trek, if you're like that, then this is a very unfulfilling episode. So that's kind of my feeling on it. I think 1 out of 10 is pretty harsh. But I guess if I had to rate this one, I'd probably give it 5 beige and gray IKEA panels.
I was going to give it 1.5 monkeys.
1.5 monkeys. Yeah, I was going to give it maybe like 4 or 5 towels.
Yeah.
2 bathtubs.
Nice.
Very good.
Okay, we're all over the place with our ratings, but yeah, that's...
I hope somebody's writing these down somewhere.
I hope so.
I hope somebody converts them somehow.
Yes. We need a primer to Ready Room rating systems because, you know, we really have...
Every week it's different.
We have no standards, so...
Right. I didn't even say how many monkeys that was out of.
Right.
No.
You didn't even say which half of the monkey you're getting with the four monkey.
I didn't specify at all.
And that makes a difference, so...
This is true. All right.
Well, that's resolutions. I don't know if our discussion is left as unresolved as the episode was, but we certainly tried. So before we go, Char, we actually have like all Trek FM people here for once. We rarely have four people here who are all Trek FM people.
It's a staff meeting.
Of course, you can find us all in Trek FM, but beyond Trek FM, Char, tell people where they can find you on the internets.
All right. Well, the best place to find me is on the Twitter webs, and my username is Oh the Profanity.
All right. How about you, Lori?
You can find me on Twitter at LoriS68.
And you have the best avatar, by the way. What does it say?
Oh my God, you caught me off guard.
It's an Intrepid class. You've probably never heard of those.
Oh, and you knew it better than I did. That's shameful. But yes, that's what it says. I like the glasses.
Hipster Janeway.
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go.
Hipster Janeway. Hipster Janeway.
It was. Right. It is.
That's where she makes your announcement, Greg. What does she say when she closes channels?
Oh, yes. Janeway out, bitches.
Oh, yeah.
And then she drops the mic and walks off.
I love that. That was great.
I'm going home.
Man, yeah, I really did, Chris, go into this episode thinking I was going to have fun with resolutions. And all I got out of it was this weird feeling of unresolution. There's really nothing else I can say other than I just... Ugh. It didn't give me anything that I wanted out of it. And maybe I had too high of expectations. Maybe I remembered it as being too much. And maybe if I watch it again with lowered expectations, I won't be quite so disappointed. But yeah, it really just, man, I want them to have four or five more scenes between Kathy and Coco.
I'm the same way. I mean, I went into this episode not planning to rip it apart. I went into it planning to... you know, delve into the relationship between them. And I do remember that when I saw this the first time, I didn't have any bad feelings about the episode. It was just an episode, you know, it was Voyager. It's fine. And then we went on to basics. And I never thought of it like, oh yeah, resolutions. That's not a very good episode of Voyager. I never thought about that. But
yeah,
then, you know, I said, I think it was last week, I said that your view changes over time when it comes to Star Trek. And
yeah,
it may be, you know, where I am in life at this point that I go into this looking for certain things and I leave it feeling unfulfilled. And so it knocks the episode down a notch for me. I think that's probably it. So,
yeah,
I think for some people this could be good. For some people, maybe it's not great. But that's where we are. So,
yeah. Well, and obviously, after you read Charlene and Mai's non-canon novel about the episode, you're going to have a whole new viewpoint. So we'll return to this episode after you've read that in about 2 or 3 years, and we'll see, you know, how our perspective has changed at that point.
I'm pretty sure that's going to change this episode for me forever. So yes. I'll never be able to watch this the same way again.
You'll understand why the monkey was there. Let's put it that way.
Finally! I need that closure.
Yes.
Oh, man. I do hope he becomes a permanent crew member at the end of your novel.
Well, yes. You never see him again on the series, but he has a very important role.
All right. Well, let's tell everyone where they can find us if they'd like to share their thoughts on resolutions, on anything we talked about during our TNG news segment today. Just go to trek.fm/contact. You'll find a form there that comes straight to my inbox. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, on Google Plus at hyperchannel/trekfmg+, and you can find us on Twitter at username trekfm. And that's myself, Greg, Char, and Drew all tweeting from that account. So chat us up any time of day, no matter where you are in the world, And usually someone is on there watching the account. And Greg, everyone can find you on Twitter as well.
That's right. I'm there at Greg Harbin, G-R-E-G-H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N. Having an awful lot of fun, as I said at the start of the show, jumping into seasons 5 of DS9 and Doctor Who, which are two shows that are just in crazy changes. And my mind's getting blown all the time. Even though I've seen DS9 before, it's still going back and watching these episodes again is really cool. So please join me. What I'd really love to see is next time I do one of my live chats, to have a lot of people writing back to me. You don't have to watch the episode with me or anything. Just tell me what you were thinking as the Dominion War was going on. And let's have that conversation.
Excellent. Yeah. I would like, I am sometimes live tweeting my viewings as well. And likewise, you know, you don't have to pop in the episode and watch with me, but if you remember it, yeah, you know, share your thoughts and let me know what you think. You can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And I'm tweeting about Japan, college football, Star Trek, music, random lyrics, all the coffee shops I go to. And I've recently started my Instagram series of Kirk Bear photos. So you can watch for those as well.
And if you can't get enough of my voice here on Trek FM, do check out my new podcast over at filmgeekradio.com, which is called Dispatches from St. Marina, and it is about a new show on ABC that airs Thursday nights at 8, 7 Central that I'm not going to say the name of because I don't want to jinx it, but do check out that show. I'm doing it with a friend of mine, Andrew Johnson. It's a lot of fun. I even get to talk about Battlestar a little bit.
So say we all.
So tune in.
All right, Greg. Well, it's time to get everyone out of here. And, you know, it's really hot and humid and tropical here today after the typhoon, so I'm going to head off and see if the bathtub's available.
All right, Chris, I think it's time to stick some Vulcan candles in it, because the Ready Room is done. Okay, Picard's phaser pants. All right.
Picard's phaser breasts.
Picard's
oh my God.
Phaser breasts.
He's had a sex change, like Spot.
Damn you, Gates McFadden.